AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Football on Off the Ball.
Not that Forrest did that, by the way. They were quite assertive, Forrest. But it behooves you to be able to play with the ball in a slightly different way than you have to do as the Brentford manager. And we don't know if that's something Thomas Frank can do. The early signs are not positive.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by William Hill. Download the app and play today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.
You're very welcome back to Tuesday night's Off the Ball. And you might have seen the news recently that Pat Devlin has left Bray Wanderers as head of football. He was also a manager in the past over five spells, firstly in 1985. Very happy to say Pat is with us in studio for what I'm officially stating is not a retirement interview. This is not a retirement moment for you, Pat. How are you doing?
Absolutely not. No. It's only the start of a new career.
How are you keeping? How's life?
Look, you know, it's been a difficult year in many ways. I've got a broken hip and I've got to get that sorted out early January. So that's the main priority at this moment in time, really. And of course, leaving Bray is a bit of a wrench. It's sad in many ways. Like, this is a new Bray. When we went back 4 years ago, it was handed over to us and it was supposed to be a joint venture with Kevin Thiele. We found out very quickly it wasn't, and we were left with it, and we had a lot of work to do. And you know, it was tough. It was a tough 4 years, let me tell you, really tough.
There's going to be loads of time in this chat to talk about football. Just first of all, on the hip and on the health, it seems that you've been carrying a broken hip for quite some time and trying to get by with your own life while carrying this injury.
Yeah, you know, stupidly I've been putting it off because of the football and trying to get to the end of the season. And, you know, when you're around a club like that and you're hopping about, it's not nice. You know, you feel awkward and you want to, and particularly when you've been so active. So, yeah, I put it off till the end of the season. I was hoping to finish with to get into the Premiership, but we didn't. So my surgeon kept saying, look, you need to get this done. And he offered me a couple of dates. And I just put it off till get the end of the season. So hopefully now go in early January and get it sorted and have a little break. You know, we haven't had much of a break since we took over Bray. It's been 24/7 most of the time. And a lot of people don't realise the work that goes on behind the scenes. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to going in and actually having it done.
Yeah, by and large, do you feel that the last couple of years have kept you healthy? I presume you've been on your feet a good bit and moving around compared to the rest of us stuck at a desk all day long?
You know, your health is your wealth.
Yeah.
And you need to look after it no matter who you are or what you do. And you must choose what's best for you. I suppose I never thought I would get to 73, and here I am still involved. So I've been very, very lucky, and it's been a magnificent adventure for me. So, you know, hopefully I can stay healthy a little bit longer. But when you have this, you know, you sort of appreciate your health because you can't get around as much. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to the break and getting it done.
When it comes to this decision that you'll be finishing up in this role, are you any part of that at all? Is there even like a 10-20% of your mind that's thinking, yeah, this is the right call, or is it bestowed upon you, this decision?
Well, you know, the timing of it couldn't be better. I went in with Tony Richardson, who was the ex-owner and chairman, and I had a free role. You know, I was head of football, and anyone that's employed with Bray or anyone that's there in a voluntary, it was down to me. I brought them all in, and I brought some great people in. Would I tell you they're great people now? No, I wouldn't, because some of them let us down badly. But that's their choice. The role itself was fantastic. We built it up from absolutely nothing. We decided last year that our policy would develop the youth completely and give them a run. And that was forced on the manager. And that was it. And it worked, and it worked very, very well from everybody's point of view. So when it comes to decisions like this and there's new owners, Tony said to me way back, it would have been last December, he says, look, I'll have to get some new investors in because it's heavy going. And I said, well, you should, because, you know, the type of money you need to get into the Premier League and stay there is, you know, amazing. So, you know, if you can't do it, you can't do it. So we looked out for, Tony looked out for investors, but I was informed all the time of what was going on. So we got new American investors in. And to be fair, they want to do things differently. And they're quite entitled to do so. They own the club now. So I'm the type of fella that, you know, particularly at my age, if I don't like something, I'll tell you. And, you know, if they want to do something, well, they're entitled to do so. But I'm also entitled to make sure that my opinion is heard, because anything I've ever done is in the best interest of the club. So the Americans want to do it their way. And rather than there being a row down the line, it's a great time to sort of move on and look after my surgery. And then they can do whatever they want to the club, and that I'm not interfering then as well.
Okay, was there some honest discussions on that front?
It's amicable enough. I'm not disappointed with the new ownership. I'm disappointed with some of our own people that were left behind, who weren't really that honest when it became clear that certain players were getting let go. I wouldn't have let certain players go, you know, but people made that decision, and that's their decision. And like, I'm not going to sit there and say, you know, yeah, you should have let players go or you don't. It's their decision. But players are very loyal to us, and, you know, they want to go a different road, and that's fine, and the best of luck to them.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. So we might come back to that in the end in terms of what your own plans are after January and after surgery and all that. I'm just very keen to kind of look back on the life in football to date, Pat, because it's been a remarkable life, both on the pitch and, of course, decades off the pitch as well, on the sidelines. So you first make your breakthrough and you first realise that you've got a talent as a young footballer at St. Joseph's Boys, right?
Mm-hmm.
So take us back to the very start then.
Well, I started off as a goalkeeper, believe it or not, just by fluke. I had no interest in football. All the kids that we hung around together were mad into the football. So eventually, at about 12 years of age, I got involved. And, you know, we had a mini tournament, and all of a sudden, there's no one else to go and goal. So I was thrown in goal. And in I went. And I started my first season playing in goal. And I'll always remember it. There was a great player many years ago. He played for St. Bernard's out in Cabra. We were playing out there, and a boy called Sammy Kelly, who was, he actually signed for Blackburn Rovers after. But Sammy was playing for St. Bernard's, I think the name of the club was. And he scored 10 against me.
Oh, jeez.
And I said, this is bad enough, but it was around Halloween, and there was other little kids behind the goal with pea shooters, and they kept pea shooting. So I said, my career as a goalkeeper is going to finish. So I started playing wide right, and, you know, I started doing really well, scored goals, and that I was with a very, very good team then. The likes of Eugene Davis, who passed away recently, Tony McGurk, who's not too good at the moment, and several other players, Paul Whelan, great players, and we had a great team, and we just had a great mentor. The mentor we had was a man called Brendan Harmon, and if anyone should get a knighthood from football, it'd be the likes of him. What he did for the club was magnificent, and you know, unfortunately couldn't see very well, and he had a real problem, but he brought us everywhere and looked after us, and he treated us like family, and he really did in every aspect, and he was a huge influence on my life, and I'm sure on everybody else. So we were there with him right from under 13s right up to under 18. We won the Leinster Youth Cup at under 17, we were beaten in the semi-final the following year, and we some very, very good players. Four of us went from St. Joseph's to Shamrock Rovers at that time.
So you made the transition to playing on the wide right from a goalkeeper, and you immediately got up to the standard where you were good enough to play for Shamrock Rovers then, come then 1970s.
I just got totally engulfed in football. I just I was never anywhere without a ball, and we played on the streets in those days, and that was it. And then I just started to develop my own skills, and I just loved it.
Who did he support as a child?
Who did I support as a child? Well, I think everybody in Ireland supported Man United. We had George Best, Dennis Law, Bobby Charlton, and so on. And I remember being out in the streets when Man United played Real Madrid in the European Cup, and we wouldn't go in, went to extra time. And so Man United was the real big one. And then Noel Cantwell was there, and, Matt Busby, all that. So we were saturated with that. Grew up following Man United, but it all changed as life went on,
And then did you have a warmth towards any particular team in Ireland at that point, or were you there for the taking with regards to who you were going to support?
I used to get on the bus from Dunleary, where I lived, and I used to get the 46A to Donnybrook and walk up to Milltown on a Saturday afternoon to watch the reserves playing. And I loved Rovers, I really did. And I used to go up every Saturday. And I remember looking over one day, and the two other people watching them was Noel O'Reilly, Lord Mercy on him, and Brian Kerr.
Right.
And I used to love watching League of Ireland B at that time, it was called, because there were some great players in it, and going up to Milltown was a treat. And then I'd get back on the bus and go home and get myself ready to play the next day. That was my weekend. So, yeah.
What age were you then?
I would have been only about 16, 17.
It's amazing, isn't it, the appetite that people like yourself and Kerr and O'Reilly would have had just to watch football and just to look at some of the best young players in their area at that time. Because of the hours and hours and hours that you guys would have spent on sidelines watching the next generation come through, I think you guys are almost wired differently. You have this love for that level of the game that I think kind of elevates you onto a different plane. It's so interesting that you mentioned the likes of Brian Kerr there.
Well, I always remember seeing them there, and to be quite honest, if you didn't have the love for the game, you get saturated in it, and sometimes you have to stand back a little bit. But no, I loved every bit of it. Look, there's ups and downs, there's mistakes, it's just bad decisions. But the overall thing, I always said, look, do what's in the best interest of the club, do what's in the best interest of the player, and what's in the best interest of the client. And I always put myself last for some mad reason. I stuck to that, and I used to love it. And as I said, when you go up to Milltown that day, you might see someone coming back from injury, like one of their great players. I mean, one of my he turned out to be a very good friend. I haven't seen him for a long time, but was Frank O'Neill. I used to go up on a Sunday to see him playing for the first team. Frank O'Neill is one of the best players I ever seen in the League of Ireland. And it was fantastic. You'd see all the bikes parked and whatever else. I'm not on my age, but it was just fascinating to get there and see those type of games. And I loved every bit of it.
Any particular highlights from the playing career with Rovers?
With Rovers, we went to Rovers, and to be quite honest with you, I sort of struggled a little bit. Paddy Ambrose was the manager at the time, and like to get to Rovers, I was only 17, 18.
Right.
And I wasn't getting enough game time. And the one thing I said to myself, look, I love this, I want to be part of it. I want to be part of my life going forward. How long can you play? So there was a great team in my area called TEK United. And TEK were, outside the League of Ireland, probably the best intermediate team in the country. And I got an approach to go to them and Dock United at the time. And there was a great guy called Tommy McGuire, who actually was with Dalkey at the time. And Tommy said to me, look, Pat, why don't you come to Dalkey with me? And I said, I'm not so sure whether I want to leave yet. All the lads were still with Rovers. So eventually I signed for TEK, and it was a great decision.
Okay, because then you get back to the League of Ireland then, back with St. Pat's, right?
That's exactly, yeah. We played, ironically, the Carlisle grounds has been a huge part of my adventure. But how that happened was we were TEK United drew St. Patrick's Athletic in the FAI Cup, and it was held in the Carlisle grounds. And there was a man called Jack Burkett. He was the manager. He had played for West Ham, and I think he won a cup winner's medal with him. An absolute gentleman, a real pro. So we played against him out there, and it was in the Carlisle grounds, and like the facilities in those days were absolutely awful. But the game took place. We were a bit unlucky. We were beaten 3-1. And after the game, he said, look, could I have a chat with Pat? And it wasn't for me. I didn't want to go back in. I was getting loads of game time. I was top player, scoring every week with TEK. Some great people around me like Brendan Bell, Pat Brett, Brendan Carroll, Jerry Monaghan. And I was really having a great time. Very experienced players around me. And I was learning an awful lot. And I was still quite young. So they came back out to me again. And they sort of, you know, in those days, you know, anywhere I was going was by bus. And, you know, they said, look, come on out to Inchicore. We have a chat in the boardroom. I went out to Inchicore and we had a chat. And they made me a great offer. And I couldn't refuse it. And off I went with Pats for 2 years. Then Jack moved on. And I was put on the transfer list, and I was delighted because at that time I had got married. So
okay.
I'm sorry, the League of Ireland wasn't, you know, where I wanted to be. So I went back to TEK and I loved every bit of it. Then I ended up going back to Athlone for a little bit. Eugene Davis got me sorted out there. So yeah, it was between all those clubs, you know.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
And trying to figure your way out in life as well. I mean, trying to actually get a quote-unquote real job and actually trying to pay your way through life. At what point do you start to realise then, when you're transitioning away from playing on the pitch, that actually football was going to become a massive part of your life post-playing, an even bigger part of your life than it was possibly with a ball at your feet?
You know, I done an apprenticeship as a painter and decorator, and I hated every bit of it, but I enjoyed the people. I loved the people I was with, and I ended up having a lovely job in the HSE. And I sort of, you know, I started looking at life in a different way, because now I've got one child and another one on the way, and you're sort of saying, right, you know, what can I do? So your job really is the main focus of your life. If you don't have your job, you can't pay your mortgage, you can't pay your bills. So I decided, look, you know, I'll focus on the job. And you know, a couple of years went by. I was coaching in St. Joseph's as well as playing for TEK. And then, of course, in 1985, the League of Ireland started, the first division. There was a new team going in, and our team in St. Joseph's at the time was quite a successful team. And I was asked, would I go as player manager with the Bray Wanderers, the second team? And I said, this looks, you know, this looks good. And I had to think about it. And I met this guy called Tommy Maguire. I'll never forget it. He was ex-manager of TEK and Dalkey. And I got on great with Tommy, and I had a little car at this stage, and I'm driving up the road, and I see Tommy on his push bike. And I pull in. I said, Tommy, you want to have a chat with you? So he sat down. You know, at that time, he was chairman of TEK, and we had a great season that year. And I said, Tommy, I've been asked to go to Bray to look after the reserve team. And he said, well, is it money? Oh, he said, no, it's not money. I'm fine. The job is great. You know, well, if it's money, we'll pay you whatever you need to stay. I said, no, it's nothing like that. I don't know whether to take the opportunity or not. I said, Doc, you've been on as well. Well, he said, look, I'll tell you what, Pat, if you think it'll help you and the family, you go to Bray, give it a shot. And if it doesn't work out, we'll always take you back down to UK. But Tommy, I love that. Thank you for being so honest. So off I went to Bray. And unfortunately, what happened in Bray was that there was a change of plan. Andy McAvoy was originally to take over the team, and Andy resigned. And I got a call, would I take over the first team? And I said, well, I've not done the first team. You know, I've done the EK all right, and we've done well. I said, I'll give it a go. So I had to start getting all new players in. And I mean, it was quite incredible, short space of time. And off I went. I had to get new staff in and everything. So that in itself was a huge challenge, yeah.
Yeah, like, because you're so synonymous with Bray at this point, had you any idea at that stage in your life that this was going to become the most important club in your legacy?
Look, it was. I mean, my story is quite amazing in many ways. In 85, I wasn't supposed to be the manager. That's number one. And then it was thrown on my lap. So, you know, we started building the team. I got some great people who, to this day, are great friends of mine. The likes of Davey O'Brien, who worked in the HSC, he was a great player, played for a couple of teams around. And then Cormac Breslin, Colin Phillips, Bo McKeever. Unfortunately, just recently, Dave Clack passed away. He was the right back, Tony Clack. So I got a team together. And I remember we played our first Leinster Cup game in Tivoli Terrace against St. Joseph's, and they beat us 1-0, and people were giving out already, which they're still giving out about. But anyway, we went on then, and we played Rovers, and we played Dundalk, and we drew at Dundalk in our first League Cup game. So the first league game came up against Longford, and lo and behold, we were beaten 1-0. And really bad, you know, again, people were very fed up with the whole thing, and we just kept at it. And that year we never lost another game, and we won the first division and got promoted. And then in between that, I was asked to go to work with Liverpool, do some work for Liverpool.
Yeah, so how did that come
about? That
opened
up a whole new well, you know, there's different stories, but I got a letter from Bob Paisley, and he congratulated me on our recent results. We played Rovers, and Rovers were in Europe at the time. And I think it was a Leinster Cup game, or a league. No, I think it was a Leinster Cup game. And Eamon Dunphy was playing, believe it or not. And Alan Campbell did a good side out. And we beat them 1-0. And they were playing Honved, I think, of Hungary in the European game the following week. So I had a friend who was a great friend of Peter Robinson's. And he wrote a letter to Peter saying, you should keep an eye out for Pat Devlin. He looks like he could help you along the line. So
so he wrote the letter to Robinson, or yeah, say, Paisley?
No, he wrote the letter to Robinson. Okay. Originally. I didn't know anything about this at the time. This came out years later.
Right.
And then the letter arrived from Paisley, which was a big, big surprise and a big thing at that day. And so all of a sudden, you know, I got on with my job and whatever. So one day, I was working. I worked in the HSE at the time, and I was sort of, you know, contemplating trying to get out of what I was doing into a different type of role altogether. And I got a phone call where I meet Ron Yates in Killiney Castle.
Right.
And I went, wow, Ron Yates. Ron Yates was a colossus of a player, and, you know, captain of Liverpool, and he was now chief scout. And I'm saying, wow, what am I going to do here? So I'd only one suit at the time. I packed in the job, went off, and going to do a bit of butter over, because the guy said, you can't, I have to go. I said, good luck. So I went over to meet Ron Yates. I sat in Killiney Castle with him, and we had a right chat, and he said, look, we're making a few changes, and you know, I'm here to really interview you. He said, but I've done my homework. We'd like you to come on board with us. And I went, for what? Like, to do what?
Yeah.
And he said, to look after all our scouting in Ireland. And I said, oh, but I said, it just might interfere with what I'm doing with Bray, and I don't want that to happen, because I've just taken on this job and it's going well. This was in the middle of the 85 season. So he said, no, we'd love to have you. So I said, okay, can you leave it with me, and we'll think about it. And I stayed with them for 6 years.
Unbelievable. So it's 1985 that you take over. Obviously, a lot happens with Liverpool Football Club in the intervening few years. Tragedy, and also, I guess, there is then a regeneration of a football club trying to refind itself again, trying to refind its own joy again. Are you separate from that, being based over here, or are you very much embedded in the ups and downs of Liverpool in the late 80s, early 90s?
No, I think when you're involved, you're involved.
Yeah,
there's no half measures. You know, you feel the pain, and you enjoy the big moments, but no, you're never sort of detached from it. Kenny was just Kenny, to me, was the most unbelievable player. And then all of a sudden, you know, he's become player manager. And, you know, after the conversation with Ron, he said, look, I want you to meet Kenny Dalglish. And I went, oh, okay. So over I went. I'll never forget it. And I wore the same suit and arrived in Anfield, and there I was watching the game in the director's box, and I'm sort of saying, this is unbelievable, you know. And I went down the next, after the game, downstairs to the office to meet Kenny. And as I look around the place, I see two children very similar to mine, and they're all playing, and Kenny's busy and his wife's busy and whatever. And this girl says to me, would you like a drink? And I said, God, I said to myself, what am I going to do here? You know, in your mind that second. Oh, yeah, I said, I'll have a little whiskey. So I had a little whiskey and lemonade, and everybody's chatting away, and there's, you know, it, lovely, warm, beautiful atmosphere. So would you like another one? I said, oh, shit. I said, I may as well. Yeah, thanks. So I had two. I had a sandwich, and I'm looking at my watch, and I'm saying, you know, the taxi be here, sure. I don't want to miss my flight. And next minute, Kenny comes over. He says, we're going to have a chat. We have a chat. I said, I really apologise. I said, look, I have to go. I said, my cab is coming for me and to get me flight. Kenny looked at me, he said, all right, I'll give you a call during the week. And I have to say, right up to this day, we've been best of friends.
Right, you're still in touch?
Yeah, I'm going out with him to dinner on Friday night.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
Over here?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Thursday night, sorry.
So when people think of that era of Irish players going to England, and specifically obviously Irish players going to Liverpool, given that's your job, I'm trying not to use what I know now to inform this, but it is still Steve Staunton, right? Like, I mean, you look, I've actually just got it up here in front of me, and like, even the great Irish players that have played for Liverpool, some of them are either side of your stint as Irish scout, yeah, in Liverpool. Like, obviously you're in with Stan later with the Republic of Ireland, but Steve Staunton is your most impressive piece of work for Liverpool Football Club anyway, right?
Well, I have to say, I would never grab credit for any player, because I think the player deserves the credit.
Of course.
I always remember the great story about Steve Staunton. There was a he was a really top player here before he went with Dundalk, and I got a call from a great guy, an unbelievable person, on the, you know, but very astute, very, very bright, Tom Saunders. He was the head man in Liverpool at the time, and he said, well, what about this boy Staunton? He says, what's your feeling on him? I said, he's a very good player. I said, very talented. I said, has a great left foot, has a chance. And I said, he comes from a really good background, very, very, you know, strong background. Ah, oh, he says, great. He says, that's great, great. He says, we just signed him. So I said, you know, I said the right things, I done the right thing. And you know, Steve is a friend, as much a friend as any of my closest friends. He's been a gentleman all his life, and he's had a smashing career, and a fantastic guy.
Like, obviously when he's making his way through a brilliant playing career in England, is there a constant over and back? Is there a relationship that exists there constantly? I presume there is, given he picks up the phone to you in the mid-2000s then.
Yeah, you know, some, even to this day, there's players will pick up the phone to you, and there's players you'll meet, and there's players you've been associated with. And you tend not to smother them. You tend to let them, and if they want help or any advice, or if I need something, I would ring them. Or I always remember Kenny saying something to me, which I found really, really nice. He said, even if you're not in touch with me, you're not out of mind, he says. So, in other words, ring anytime, you know. Okay. And that's the way I've operated as well. I mean, I learned a lot from Kenny. He's a torrid gentleman, and a football, you know, legend is not the word, and he has kept me involved in everything he's done, you know, whether it was a film, when he was knighted, I was over there, he's just been unbelievable.
Did Kenny and Stan have that same closeness?
I think Kenny, when you're a manager, it's difficult to have that close. I never asked that. They get on well, they go to different things together and so on, but I never asked that.
I'm just thinking kind of
like I wouldn't have saying we've been at different things together, but I never asked that.
Because it feels that Steve Staunton, and we can chat about the time in charge of the Republic of Ireland here, it feels that the one thing is that he
did realise he needed help and he needed to call in people who he greatly respected in the game. Obviously, the most famous example is Bobby Robson.
Yeah.
And I did wonder, when you were talking about them both like that, did was there ever a call to Kenny? Was there ever a chance that Dalglish might have been one of the people that he might have tried to lean on in that period of time?
I think Kenny was sort of wrapped up every time that opportunity came up. I think he could have been. Like, I remember, the Bobby Robson was in 6 months. They were all settled in before I got involved. But Bobby Robson was, I mean, I knew Bobby from Newcastle, but Bobby was unbelievable. Like, he's up there with the best. And at the time, it looked like, you know, the perfect appointment. But unfortunately, I'll tell you what happens, you see. When you appoint someone like that, particularly when you're Irish, other people would suggest that maybe you should have brought in other Irish names and helped them along. But like, when you're a manager, I think you need to be left to make your own decision. And you shouldn't be influenced by whoever or whatever nationality. You must bring in somebody who you think will do the job that you need to be done. And I think at that time, Stan had made that decision. And the backroom staff was Kevin McDonald and Alan Kelly. Now, Kevin was a smashing guy. Alan Kelly is the most unbelievable fella you could ever meet. An absolute torrid gentleman, very professional. And I would put him up there with the best I've ever worked with. So he did have good people around him. And whether the Kenny thing ever came up, I don't think so. I think Kenny would have been certainly tied up at the time.
So you're not in there with him from the very start then?
No, no. I came in about, I think it would have been 3 or 4 months later. He wanted somebody to help with the League of Ireland situation. And he wanted, at the time, he sort of said it would be a coordinator type of thing. So I'd watch and scout and recommend players that for the international team.
Right. And that's interesting.
Yeah.
Like, because if you look back at living memory, it's the period of time where the Republic of Ireland really probably had the least requirement for domestic players, if we're being honest, just because the quality of players available to the Republic of Ireland was so strong, and there wasn't maybe the investment being put into the League of Ireland. I'm not saying it's being very well funded or it's in unbelievable shape. It's still got a lot of work to do right now, but it feels that era of the early Staunton phase of his Republic of Ireland managerial stint, for him to be taking an interest in what the League of Ireland had to offer is quite an interesting wrinkle.
Well, you see, he actually, you know, he started off with Dundalk, and anytime he would talk to me, I'd be talking League of Ireland anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, and like, to be fair, you know, a lot of the managers would love to pick League of Ireland players, but again, it doesn't matter who you are or what you are. If you're not good enough, you can't be selected. So what he wanted to do was to look at a B international team, and we done that, and we brought in some players, and it worked very, very well. But from my point of view, I was catapulted from being the coordinator then into the staff, and then all of a sudden, I'm in the deep end. And it was funny, it was quite funny. It was on RTE. We played Germany away in Stuttgart, I think it was, and Steve got sent off for kicking a bottle, which ironically caused him a terrible problem down the line. But anyway, I remember someone saying, Jimmy McGee, I think it was, or whoever the commentator was, Pat Devlin's taken over now for the team, which was not the case. But it was funny. Then all of a sudden, so he was suspended then for the infamous Cyprus game. And that causes quite an embarrassment to be beaten by Cyprus.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
What was your role on the staff?
Well, I was there as a coach. I was there as an advisor. I was there to pick up the bottles. I was there to help in every way I could. And that's what I did.
What are your recollections of the Cyprus evening?
It was a nightmare. Stan wasn't on the bench, number one. And they had a big boy up front, I always remember. And he was given I think it was Andy O'Brien, a terrible time. And I suggested, look, you should bring in, who was it was playing right back? John, it wasn't John O'Shea, but whoever was playing right back, bring him in and they might just, and it didn't happen. The game just ran away from us and we didn't perform well on the night, you know, and no one was to blame. It was just one of those nights. They were better than us and sometimes you had to take it. But we were poor on the night. We were poor.
Are you immediately aware of the storm that exists around the team at that point?
Yeah. Look, I've been in lots of storms, hurricanes, you name it. Football is like that. You know, it's great when you're winning and it's great when it's going well. But, you know, journalists have to do a job, you know, and their job is to, you know, start looking at all different aspects of it. And when results are not going well, you're the target. And the storm started developing and all sorts of different things happened. Yeah, and we were right in the middle of it. Some of it, I would have to say, was dreadfully, dreadfully unfair and unwarranted. You don't mind criticism, but, you know, it was a little bit over the top. I think we all got over it. It was sad because I think he would have done a good job. Because everything I seen that he done from a purely football point of view was excellent and he was getting there. But he'd big players to deal with, like big names and very talented players. And if they don't buy into it, well, then you're in trouble. And some of the publicity wasn't helping. And, you know, I suppose it was inevitable what was going to happen if you didn't. And it was a short, you know, it was short enough. And I think he was grabbing a hold of it. He had a hold of it. And then all of a sudden, you know, it was over, you know.
Like, as somebody who knows football, what it's like to be under the spotlight so well as a player, did Staunton underestimate maybe just how great the fishbowl is here, especially having to be here and managing the Republic of Ireland team here and maybe not having the distance of flying back and over from England maybe, and, you know, when you're a player and when the negativity was going to set in, did the magnitude of that actually take him by surprise?
Well, you know, I don't think it bothered him too much because he was totally focused on the game. Now, I remember what happened to me. There was an article wrote the day we were going to Germany. I'm in my hotel room and the phone rings and someone says, Pat, did you see the article in The Independent? And I said, No, I'm in the back room of all this. I'm not. And there's a ferocious article about myself.
What did it say?
Philip Quinn. It just said, how can this man be there? And he's not at that level. I don't pick the team. Steve picks the team. And, you know, I don't have an input into that. I'm there. If someone asks me an opinion, I give it. But I just thought that the article was not really, even though I was named in it, it was to have a go at Stan before the Germany game. And I just thought it was so unwarranted at the time. I've told Philip what I thought since, so I'm not, you know, talking. And it's well gone and it's well fixed. But I thought the timing of it was shocking. And as I was told later, it wasn't him. He was told to write the article by the editor. So, you know, people don't see that, but fans wouldn't understand that either because fans just see. But it was disruptive. And it wasn't right. And I must say, all the players rallied around me and the squad at the time. It was just totally unnecessary. So the real point I'm trying to make is that I don't think bad publicity affects too many. I think when it gets personal, that's wrong. And there was a couple of things that went on in Stan's ear, which was personal. And it was wrong.
Just one last thing on Stan. Do you think he was a better manager than he showed with the Republic of Ireland?
100%. He just didn't get the time. And a real honest guy. And I suppose if there was any weakness, it was that he played with a lot of the players.
Okay. Too familiar.
No, I wouldn't say familiar. It was just, if there was a little distance in it, it would have worked.
If he'd waited a decade.
But you can't wait. If you're offered a job like that, you know, you've got to take it.
Did it kill his confidence as a coach?
I wouldn't say killed his confidence. I just think it puts a little bit, I suppose, pressure on you. And do you want to do this again? Do you want to step into it again or do you not? And I think that only comes down to the individual, and he's the only one who can answer that. But what a gentleman, what a loss, and what a career he's had. I mean, unbelievable career. And you know, if you look at the stats around his Irish time, it wasn't that bad. It was quite good.
How was your confidence after that experience?
I was in a different situation. Like
still being targeted publicly, though, yeah, as you just outlined.
That was, that. I have to say, yeah, at that time, that was, wow, that was awful. It wasn't nice, not just for me, but my family, my friends, anyone who was associated with me. And it just was gutter journalism, to be quite honest. It was unnecessary. That was it.
But getting back on the horse after that, does it take you a while not to bother? Right?
No. Okay, I always remember my mother saying to me many years ago, I had the flu, and there was a knock at the door, and this lady came in. She said, "Mrs. Devlin, yeah, Pat's out there breaking my window again." And she said, "That's impossible. He's here, sick." "Oh, God," she says, "I'm really sorry. I thought it was him." And my mother turned around and she said, "You'll always be in trouble with this football." And she wasn't wrong. So there you have it.
There's a load of other highlights and incredible moments, really, over the following two decades, really, that we could touch on. I was just watching the highlights of the crazy playoff against Monaghan United there earlier on. It's just an absolutely bonkers game. The end of the game before you even get to the penalties. Yeah. I just kind of want to get your general take before we wrap up, though, because we've done a lot of specific bits from the career, just on, you know, the life of a modern League of Ireland manager or even director of football or sporting director at a club right now. As you say, there's been new investment into Bray. There's going to be an intention from the new investors that there's going to be a greater sort of business approach to the club, I'd imagine. There's going to be greater professionalism at all levels in the league. How are we keeping up in terms of the humans that are on the sideline in the league? How are we keeping up with, you know, the relative areas of new investment and, I guess, the greater prominence of the league in the sporting landscape of Ireland? Are we well equipped in terms of our coaches? Are we well, you know, set for what will hopefully be a period of growth over the next 5-10 years, let's say?
Well, that's a huge question.
And it's way broader than just Bray.
I think it goes back to my earlier comments about me. You know, your job, your family is the most important thing. And we've tried to build what I would call a brand here in Ireland and we've all gone professional now. So it's not a hobby. It's not part-time anymore. It's full-time and it's cutthroat, whether you like it or not. And if you're playing for any of the top teams now, you're paying to pay your bills, and you need to pay them, and your contract is very, very important. So everything has changed. It's not like, as I said, you know, 15, 20 fellas with electricians, carpenters, painters, whatever, playing for you. You want full-time players and you want full-time commitment. And all the players' attitudes have changed because they want everything the best. They want to play the best, and they want, you know, they want to get paid the best, but they want to play as well. They want game, and rightly so, because you don't get better unless you play. So the demands are so different, and outside of the actual sport, the demands as well, because they've got a wife or kids, or they might want a mortgage or whatever. So they need then, and then they have to say, well, you know, is this what I want? Can it last, you know, after 35? What do I do next? So then the next stage is coaching and managing. Can that last? Can you make a life out of it? I think I'm one of the very fortunate ones that when I left my particular job in 1990, I decided I want to do something different. And I ended up looking after disadvantaged kids for nearly 15 years, and I had permission then to work on another business, which I then started my sports management company, which I still run today. So I didn't have one eggs or in the basket. I had, you know, I had quite a few. So it's difficult for people to make a living out of football. particularly in Ireland, and to make a good living. And that's really what you want for your family. So your question is quite loaded in the sense that,
yeah,
you know, you've got to look at the big picture, not just the moment. You've got to look down the line. Nowadays, I've seen in Bray people who you would sort of, you know, have with you in any war or any fight now are not the same people, because they need their mortgage paid and they need this and that, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It goes. So it's much more difficult. Now, the league and the investors coming in, they want more. They want to win, and they want to be the Shamrock Rovers. And some of them have even bigger ambitions, being better than Shamrock Rovers. Shamrock Rovers, to me, have carried this too. The other great story is Shelbourne. I love what Shelbourne has done. And it's fantastic. St. Pat's are the same. But, you know, it costs huge money, huge investment, and it has to be full-time. And it's a business. It's an industry now. And it has to be treated like that.
Because it feels that we're in an interesting period when it comes to the cult of the manager in League of Ireland. You have one of the greats of all time in Stephen Bradley.
Absolutely.
And he's done an absolutely magnificent job. The career of Stephen Kenny is very interesting. Yes. when you talk about St. Pat's. And then you have the flare-up of Damien Duff, where he's taken a team that were very recently in the First Division to a title, and then quits unexpectedly. And I'm not sure if that's a representation of the demands on the job, or, you know, the demands on the players, that maybe the players aren't able to kind of respond to in an appropriate manner in the eyes of their manager. Or maybe it's just a very individual case of Damien Duff. Like, I still find that whole era of Duffer at Shells a fascinating one.
Yeah, look, Damien's a fascinating character. And, even as a player, I mean, I worked with Damien more than anyone ever did. And, you know, I've never gone there and spoke about him, but what he achieved in Shelbourne was unbelievable. But it takes its time. It drains you. Like, if you're that energetic and you're putting it in, mentally and physically, it takes you. And going back to my comment, then you have your family. Like, your family suffer from it, because it's 24/7. If you're doing it right, it's 24/7, and you have to do it, and there's no prisoners.
Yeah, it does feel that if Troy Parrott hadn't scored his late goal in Hungary, there might have been a conversation about who the next Republic of Ireland manager would be. Fingers crossed that that's not actually going to come up for a long time. Hopefully Hamer is the manager forever, because it means that Ireland have qualified for loads of competitions. However, if there is to be a managerial change in a couple of years' time, 3 years' time, or whatever the case may be, do you see Damien Duff, do you see Stephen Bradley as potential Republic of Ireland managers?
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. And why not?
Both of them.
Yeah, and why not? I mean, I see Robbie Keane in there as well. And look, I met last week at the soccer house John O'Shea, and what a wonderful person he is. Paddy McCarthy. Like, but, you know, they're all coming around. Keith Andrews, like, you know, they're coming, you know, and we're developing a lot of good coaches. So there's a lot of people in there that would come into that category. I think from a League of Ireland point of view, it would be great to see someone who has been connected to the League of Ireland. But again, you know, our business has changed. The soccer business has changed. Playing in Europe is fascinating, and it's great. But we have to do well in Europe. We just can't get in and just be part of it. You need to, you know, make real inroads to it. And you see some of the smaller clubs or smaller countries in the world now developing in Europe as well. So the League of Ireland needs to do better, and we need to leave our mark there. And yeah, at international level, we need to do much better. And it's a long time coming, but the result with Troy Parrott was just fantastic. Fairy tale stuff. That's what everybody wants. But changing managers every couple of years is probably not the answer either.
No.
You need to have a little bit of consistency in the whole thing, you know.
What's next for you in football?
Well, my phone hasn't stopped, and there's all sorts of little things out there. But I think the priority for me at the moment is just getting myself back to some fitness and looking after myself. But I've lots of things going on, lots of offers. I'm certainly not going anywhere at this moment in time. I just love it too much. And I wouldn't cut out never going back to Bray. You know, maybe down the line they might need help. I'd love to go back to Bray. I'm not here to slag off anyone or Bray. But you'd be disappointed with some of the things that's happened. You wish them well. You hope they do very well. I was always intended to retire when we won and got back into the Premier League. I thought this year we were very close and I was disappointed it didn't happen. But look, you still want Bray to do well. We won two FAI Cups out there. We won leagues. We got promoted. We got relegated. You mentioned the Monaghan game earlier. That was the most, you know, amazing night. It was called the Great Escape. And it was the Great Escape. It was the most amazing thing that would happen in football. And yet, football is amazing, and it throws out so many different challenges, not only to yourself and not only to the journalists, but to the family. And the family sometimes is forgotten in all this, because when you're out 24/7, you're doing that amount of work that we did. Like when we were in Bray for the last 4 years, we'd be down in the mornings, we'd do a bit of work, we'd come back down for the training, and we wouldn't get home at 9:30, 10 o'clock, back down the same morning. We'd end up painting the place, we'd end up decorating, going out. It was very funny last year. We went out with no furniture for to try and get Bray, and we went out and got secondhand furniture and brought it in and got the place looking really, really well. So all that, and no one sees it. The fans arrive on a Friday night and they pay their money and they're entitled to do whatever they want. But I'd love the fans to get more involved, particularly in a club like Bray, because if you look at Shamrock Rovers, huge fan base, Pats, Shelbourne, you know, Bowes, unbelievable. And that's what you want. And if you're all working together and pulling together, you can pull that club right up. Because if you look at Shelbourne, it's a great story, but it was huge investment. Huge investment in the team, huge investment for Damien. And if you give managers that support and you give them that finance, they can achieve, and they really can achieve. But when you get to a certain level, your problem is you've got to go to another level. And that's where we all need to aspire to. And I don't think the government, and I'm being honest, they've started to give us some money, but I just think we've been neglected for many, many years. If you look at all our facilities around the country, shocking. Rovers got really lucky with Tala, and it's a fantastic venue. But you look at the rest, we've nothing. You know, and we've got good players, great coaches, great managers, and they're trying to make a living out of it. And making a living, whether it's a journalist or whether it's a manager or a coach, making a living is much more important than winning trophies. Because if you can't make a living, you can't do anything, and you can't feed your family, you can't pay your mortgage, and that has to be taken into consideration. And people forget that at the end of the day, we're all human. We're all trying to make a go of it. We want the industry to be the tops. We want it to go further, but to do that, you need huge finance. And I just hope that down the line, you know, the government can start, you know, supplying us with much more finance so that we can develop not just one club, not three clubs, the whole league. And I do think the league itself is crying out for change. I think the league is it's static at the moment. Rovers are winning it. Change it. Make it bigger. Bring in the people who are applying for the third division. Make a division one, and promote 4 or 5 clubs from Division 1 at the moment, and give them the chance to challenge the Rovers of this world. You know, when I see Drogheda surviving, they're doing brilliant, and you see other clubs like Shelbourne who were in the First Division a couple of years ago, and as was Rovers years ago, they were in the First Division. And if you give other clubs that opportunity, the game will get better, and the facilities should get better, and investment should come. And like the Americans coming in, or whoever it may be, they may see that opportunity to develop that club. And if they do and it's successful, well, then it's successful for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a contagious level of success when one club kind of shows the way and creates that path. Listen, Pat, it's been great chatting to you. Thanks, Millie, for popping into the studio. Very best of luck next January with the operation and all that. I'm sure you'll be flying fit in a couple of months' time. But really appreciate you recounting us with some brilliant stories this afternoon. Pat Devlin, a pleasure.
Thank you.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by William Hill. Download the app and play today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.